This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Most of those who choose to serve our country in the military are highly motivated individuals willing to put themselves through what many of us would consider torturous physical training and then be willing to go wherever they are sent and endure uncomfortable, often dangerous conditions. That willingness, combined with the training they receive, the situations they experience, and the camaraderie that develops among their fellow soldiers, are exactly the things that can make a transition back to civilian life difficult. As we wind down our decade-long war in Iraq and Afghanistan, America has a lot of returning veterans who will need help reacclimating to civilian life. Blake Bourne was one of those soldiers. He served in the Army as an infantry officer for 6 years, rising to the rank of captain. He deployed twice to Iraq, earned an expert infantryman's badge, combat infantryman's badge, and a Bronze Star. But that seemed easy when compared to fitting back into a normal life. Today, Blake Bourne, though, is the Director of Community Initiatives for Charlotte Bridge Home, which does assist other veterans to make that transition, and he joins us for the hour. Welcome.
Thank you.
Can you say infantryman?
Infantryman.
Darn, that's good. Also with us is David Sanagara, a technical recruiter for Queen's Associates. That's an IT consulting firm. Prior to taking that job, though, he spent 4 years as an armor officer and was deployed to southern Afghanistan, where he earned a Bronze Star. Good morning and welcome to you.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you.
And Will Manning is a business banking relationship manager and senior vice president for global commercial banking at Bank of America, who also serves on the board of the USO of North Carolina. He was a combat engineer in the U.S. Army for 5 years and a master parachutist for the 82nd Airborne Division, a famous unit. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thank you.
We should mention before we start here that there will be a Community Veterans Summit next Tuesday, April the 8th, from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Charlotte Convention Center, geared toward HR professionals and employers, in part to demonstrate the value veterans can bring to the workplace. But it's open to the public, and it's free, and it's sponsored by Charlotte Bridge Home. You spent a lot of time, Blake, since returning from your military service, working to raise awareness of veterans as civic assets and helping returning veterans to acclimate. What was your personal experience like coming back from war? And I want to hear about all this from all three of you. What was your personal experience like?
Sure. It was an interesting experience in that I didn't think about it. It just was time to get out of the military. My wife was offered a position here in Charlotte, and we loved the city and decided to make it our home. So when I transitioned, I actually had a full-time job lined up as a stay-at-home father, so with an infant son. And so I was excited. We had things on our plate. And it wasn't until I was here for a few months that I really realized that the camaraderie, the experiences, all the things that you mentioned at the opening of the show really did have an effect on me. And trying to replicate that or find that in the city, a non-military town like Charlotte, was difficult.
And you were in the military for how long?
Six years.
6 years. So 6 years of that, living that life in that experience and in those conditions, it's hard to replicate at least the camaraderie part of it.
It is. You become very attached to your peers, your boss, your employees, all the fellow soldiers that you're there day in and day out. You're with each other. You know each other in a very intimate way. And then you come to a city like Charlotte and everyone's incredibly welcoming, but you're not necessarily needed.
And we're completely detached and have been since the beginning from these wars because we don't have a draft. And once it fades from the initial shock and awe phase, the media doesn't cover it like it did in the beginning. And you go on for 10 years and people don't even know we're doing it. Only you know we're doing it. And that's got to be difficult, isn't it?
It is. The families and the soldiers that do, take that call and answer the bell and join the military, they understand. And I think it's a good thing that we went from 11% of the country serving in World War II to 7% in Vietnam, but now we're less than 1%. Mm-hmm. I think that's a testament to our technology, the world as a whole, but what that creates here at home is a disconnect, is that a lot of people don't understand.
Right. So let me hear from David and Will about this. What was your experience like exiting the military, entering civilian life?
Again. Absolutely. So my experience basically was that my wife was going to UNCC for graduate school. Mm-hmm. So I actually, just like Blake, had Charlotte already picked out for me. So I knew it was time to get out and follow my wife over here to Charlotte. And I spent a few months looking for work, and I think the first thing that kind of hit me was not just that there weren't a lot of people in the town that I knew, but specifically military. So like Blake was alluding to, you know, you've got that lack of camaraderie. But so you're just like anybody moving, you know, you're coming to a new town, and you add that to getting out of the military. It's definitely a bit of a difficult transition.
Would it be easier? Would it have been easier to come to a town like Fayetteville, which is a military town?
Absolutely. I mean, in military town, you don't have to explain what a captain was or where you rank on the scale. They understand all your badges. They understand all the acronyms. Those military towns are full of military families and personnel, so there's less explanation.
But aren't there a lot of baby boomers in the hierarchy of these businesses who were in Vietnam, for instance, and would know what a captain is?
Some are, definitely. I mean, I came across that in my job search. I came across folks that had been in the military prior to. But I think for me, the biggest hurdle was a lot of the HR folks had not been. Some of them might be younger or just never had that experience in the first place. And so you're not going to get a chance to speak with that manager in a lot of cases until you get through the HR folks in the first place.
And Mike, to that point, mm-hmm. my experience, my level of comfort was in Fayetteville. And that's where I stayed when I transitioned out of the military. I looked for my first job outside of the Army there. And we at that time, we did not have organizations like the Charlotte Bridge Home, which could transition officers and enlisted personnel into corporate ranks. So you're generally left to figure this out on your own and try to transition your skills, looking through news clippings, advertisements, try to translate your skills into what you think or perceive corporate roles are.
But none of you were born into the Army. You all lived civilian lives before you enlisted in the Army and went over to Iraq and Afghanistan. This may be difficult for people to understand. Why isn't you just flip that switch and you go back to what you were before? It doesn't happen that way?
It absolutely does not happen. my career has been a little bit a winding journey, and mainly because of that translation, the inability to translate what skills I have, what skills I could bring to the table to the requirements of a job. And so my early portions of my career, I was searching, and it wasn't until I came to an organization like Bank of America where I could find a company that valued the skills and the core values that I brought to the table, and I could find individuals like individuals and veterans in the company, and we could work together to bring our skills to bear and find the right role where we fit.
Is that because that bank was built by a former Marine, Hugh McCall, and some of that ethos remains?
That ethos and those core values definitely remain.
You guys, it strikes me, also are coming back from war at a really bad time in the American economy and a really, really bad time for jobs, because a lot of people lost their jobs in 2007 and haven't been able to find new jobs. And we're told that many of the jobs that those people had are never coming back. And here you are. I don't know how many guys are in the military and women are in the military, hundreds of thousands of people now being released from the military and thrust into the job market at a time when the job market is pretty soft. Is that part of the problem that you all faced?
I think it is. I think there's approximately a quarter of a million people getting out of the military every year for the next 4 years as the military draws down. So you're talking about 250,000 people who had well-paying jobs with benefits that will now be trying to replicate that in cities like Charlotte. So it's definitely an issue.
And go ahead. Okay, no, I thought someone was going to say something. As you leave, or as you prepare to leave, what does the military do? Do they tell you things? Do they put you through training? Exit training? Do they give you the lay of the civilian landscape before you leave? What happens?
Yeah, Mike, I think the military does its best in some transition to help you create a general resume. But you can't fully translate your skills, your experiences, your core values onto paper. And so that's why it's very, very important to have organizations like the Charlotte Bridge Home and individuals there, and also corporations who have veterans and who can help translate and help those veterans and those transitioning out of the military find the right and proper fit.
And Mike, sorry, the military, their job is to fight and win wars. I mean, that's what their focus is. Their focus isn't to transition veterans. Now, they realize now it's an important thing, because generations from now, if we don't properly transition our veterans, then, Dave and Will and I, we may, advise our children differently.
Why don't we know that? We've been a nation for over 200 years, and we've been fighting wars for over 200 years, and we've had a standing army for probably 150, 180 years now. Why don't we know about transitioning back into civilian life?
It's hard because it's a small population. You know, it's after World War II. Right now, this is the largest group of folks that are exiting the military since World War II. So it's not really been an issue since World War II on this kind of scale.
I'm also curious. All three of you did different things in the military, and I'm sure that there's very little call for a munitions expert in the real world today. But there are things that you did as a munitions expert, I'm sure, that were valuable and have skills that are translatable. For instance, I have no idea what a business banking relationship manager and senior vice president for global commercial banking does, but I'm sure you could put that on a piece of paper and I could think if I were running a paperclip company, I could find something for you to do. Why can't those skills that you learned in the Army also be put on a piece of paper that I can understand and figure out what I can do with you?
No, Mike, you make a fantastic point. So to answer your question, what a senior relationship manager does in a commercial bank is we build relationships with small business owners. So the ability to relate, to show loyalty, to be able to develop and deepen relationships, that's the core of what a military, a soldier does. You build a team, you work as a combined unit, you inspire the team, and you create loyalty. And those skills, being able to relate personally, being able to get things done on behalf of your teammates, and it translates to the business world where you can do that on behalf of your customers or your clients.
Hmm. Mike, I think what you're saying earlier also about coming back at a difficult time in the economy, and you add that to what Will is saying in terms of difficult to get our skills onto paper. Mm-hmm. And there was a time when you had military candidates that were considered developmental candidates. So let's say a company was hiring, or even if they weren't hiring, and they were just looking for good talent. And, a military candidate brings all the skills that we've already discussed to the table. But if you've got an economy and companies where they need people that can come in and hit the ground running, then that might be difficult for certain military for veterans, to do. So you kind of combine those two things. And that's part of where, the problems have come from. You have to be able to take that time to onboard and train a developmental candidate like a veteran, because they're going to have these amazing skills that we've brought up. But for them to come in and start as a business manager like Will, that's going to be a challenge.
They say that military life changes you. Your military experience changes you. And I would suppose it particularly changes you if you saw really bad situations in combat and had your members of your unit die or be seriously injured in IED explosions and things like that. Has it changed you? Did military life change the three of you?
Absolutely. I mean, it's... The Army does, for us, the three of us, the Army, the military does a great job of indoctrinating you, of training you to be prepared, regardless of the situation, to watch out for the men and women on your left and right, and that becomes natural.
These seem like great job skills, too.
You would think so, right. Yeah, resiliency, adaptability, flexibility, awareness. Yeah, definitely.
Work ethic, discipline. Mike, I guess as I listened and read through your comments more, were there some downsides to it? There is post-traumatic stress currently in the military environment today, and that's why it's important again that we have individuals and organizations like Charlotte Bridge Home and corporations who can help those veterans transition and help them find the right resources to integrate.
That's Will Manning, who is a veteran and a senior vice president at Bank of America. David Sanagera is with us, also a former vet. They're all vets. Technical recruiter for Queen Associates, and Blake Bourne, director of Charlotte Bridge Home, which we'll be talking about as we go through the hour here. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Cincinnati Insurance Companies, offering business, home, auto, and life insurance through a network of independent agents supported by local claims service. Information at CINFIN.com. Not all coverage is available in all markets. Now, most of us have heard about the Founding Fathers, can probably rattle them off, name, rank, and serial number. We can probably tell you precisely what they did to help start the country. Well, what about the Founding Mothers? Outside of Martha Washington and Abigail Adams, Dolly Madison, who can you name and what can you tell us about them? We're going to find out all about them Monday at 9 when Cokie Roberts joins us. She has two books about the Founding Mothers, one aimed at children, one at adults, and she'll tell us everything she knows and probably more Monday at 9.
A A suitcase filled with sheet music. That's what a family took when they left Minsk. And now the child of that family, Evgeny Kutik, has grown up and has an album unpacked from that suitcase.
There's a connection. It always reminds me where I'm from.
Music from the Suitcase, a collection of Russian miniatures today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR News source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Blake Bourne is with us today. He's the director of Charlotte Bridge Home. That's an organization that helps veterans reacclimate to civilian life and also a number of other things, which we'll talk about. David Sanagera is with Queen Associates. They're an IT firm. He spent 4 years in the armed forces as an armor officer. Will Manning is senior vice president of Bank of America and a former master parachutist in the 82nd Air. We had a caller who couldn't hold, who identified himself as a veteran, and he's curious, he says, as to why today veterans coming back would be treated any differently than anyone else who is looking for a job. He wonders why it's so different than 30 years ago when people would come back and just find a new job like anyone else. He doesn't expect any special treatment and wonders why anyone thinks they should receive special treatment. Is that what you're saying? You're not talking about receiving special treatment, are you?
No, not at all, Mike. I think it's not about receiving special treatment. I think it's about just assisting veterans in translating their experience.
So why is it more difficult? Because we didn't have these discussions. I'm old enough to know this. You're not. We didn't have these discussions after Vietnam. In fact, a lot of the guys coming, and mostly they were guys coming back, they weren't women, were spit upon in airports, and they took their uniforms off, and they were told to take their uniforms off as they transitioned back into the United States, not civilian life, just coming home from the war, so that they wouldn't be mistreated. That's all changed. But now we never had these conversations about getting back into life. Why are we having them now?
Well, look what happened, you know, following Vietnam. Was it the highest? I think Vietnam veterans have the highest rate of homelessness of any group in the United States. So it's pretty critical that we have this conversation now because we don't want to repeat the mistakes that happened following Vietnam.
And we have to remember also, I think, that after World War II, those men were heroes. They did not get spit upon when they came home. They were heroes. They fought the good war. Everybody was behind them 150%. It's kind of like you coming back, actually, isn't it?
It is, Mike. And back to your earlier question, generally we didn't treat our Vietnam veterans with proper respect and dignity. I think the country has learned from that. And I think from a business perspective, the business case has been made for veterans in the workplace. The more successful our CEOs are, the more successful our corporations are, where we have former military leaders at the helm of that, of those organizations. And you can see and watch it in a visible, tangible way, and it translates to the bottom line. The business case has currently been made and continues to be made. And so it's not a feel-good story. There's a definite business case and a cause and need for individuals who come back with critical skills and also have discipline and great cultural fit to fit back into an organization and add value.
The three of you have come back and successfully reintegrated. You've found valuable things to do, and you're making contributions, and you're making a living, and things I would think are pretty good. I mean, I can't speak for everybody at the table here, but there are those who have not been as fortunate as you, who are really struggling to fit back in, struggling to find a place, struggling to get a job. What's the difference? What did you do differently?
I think a lot of times it's luck, it's timing, it's the experience you had prior to the military, it's what you experienced while you were in the military. Everybody's different. I mean,
is it also what happened before you entered the military?
A lot of times, yes, definitely.
In my case, I was one of the easier, you know, veteran candidates to place, essentially. So I came out of the Army with a 4-year degree, and I was able to find a position that allowed me to continue my career without taking too much of a step back from my income when I was in the military, mm-hmm. and you know, continuing on and looking forward to the future. But if you have somebody who, for example, stayed in the military for a full 20 years, and that family, all they've known is a 20-year-long military career, and now all of a sudden they are in their 40s looking for work, it's a little bit more difficult to find a position that you can grow into without having a pretty significant financial difference and difference for your family as well.
Mm. Go ahead.
And the thing is, Mike, the military, it's an incubated society. It's an incubated, you know, environment. You have one doctor, you have one dentist, you have one daycare. one grocery store on post. And if you spent 20 years, like David said, in that environment and in the military culture, that's all you've really known. So then you step into a city like Charlotte and you start looking for jobs and you start looking for service providers, it can become overwhelming because when you're in the military for that long, you have no idea what a banking relationship manager does.
Too many choices all of a sudden. All the things that we talked about that make you valuable as employees, this discipline, this camaraderie, this looking out for the team building experiences, all the skills that you bring to the table seem to be also life skills that could be applied just to building a life outside of work. And a lot of people coming back from the service are having trouble with that. Why?
The military does an amazing job of supporting its military service members. They do a great job of putting a cocoon of support around them, the families, themselves, you know, education benefits. Everything that you need is on base, is on post. And when you step out of the military and out of uniform, that constellation of care is no longer there. So it becomes difficult to navigate.
And that's one of the reasons for your organization to exist, correct? It's also one of the reasons the USO exists.
It's the same reason the USO exists, same reason Charlotte Bridge Home exists. It is to provide an organization that can transition you, to give a service member or a veteran the proper services that they need as they're outside of the military, to help them cope with what they've been through in life, what they've done, what they've been through as they've served the country. Mm-hmm. And that's our duty. Those organizations and those veterans who have served feel it's our responsibility and our duty to give back and help those that are currently serving and transitioning to integrate.
I don't know if this makes a bit of difference at all. You're the experts. You tell me. This is an all-volunteer army. You guys went to Afghanistan, and I don't think anybody in the room went to Iraq, did they? You did. Excuse me. You went over there because you signed up to go. In Vietnam, most of the people who went to Vietnam were drafted. That many of them didn't want to be there. It was the last place on earth they wanted to be, and the military was the last place on earth that they wanted to be. Is there a difference when you come out of that environment as an enlistee versus being a draftee? In terms of how you get back in to civilian life?
Mike, that's a good question. I think there is somewhat of a difference in just what brought you there and, you know, how you got in and the experience you had being there voluntarily and being there because you wanted to be there. Mm-hmm. Then when you get out, it does become a struggle because there's opportunities in the military. You know where you need to be. You know what time you need to be there. You have people that are telling you when to go to the dentist and the doctor. And now you come out into the civilian world, and now you've got to navigate that for your family, for yourself.
That, I don't mean to belittle that, but that what that sounds like is an extension of childhood in a way, because your parents told you, we're taking you to the doctor today. You have softball practice at 2:00. Got to do your homework now. And the military is regimented for a reason. I mean, you have to get things – you have all these people. They have to do what needs to be done, and they have to do it on a schedule.
It is. And the military wants you to spend all of your energy and time and decision-making power at work. So anything that's outside of work, they'll take care of for you, because they want all of that brain power focused on that.
And most people go into the military at 18, 17 years old, and they're coming right out of that earlier life where their parents took care of everything. So they've had a kind of a delayed adulthood in many ways. In one way, they have an adulthood that most of us will never experience. Mm-hmm. But socially, in terms of your life, they've never had that experience.
Absolutely. Whether you go in at 18 after high school, or you come out of, you know, an ROTC academy at 22, and then you spend from 5 or 6 years to 25 years, you're absolutely.
But Mike, clearly there's a difference in someone who voluntarily chooses to serve versus someone who's drafted. Let's just choose the extreme and just say you're drafted and you absolutely don't want to go. The beauty of the military system is that the mores, the values, the discipline that you're provided and given, and the institutional culture that's placed in you as you're there, the output generally is the same loyal, disciplined, technically savvy individual. And that's where what organizations and businesses are looking for on the outside.
And when you're living in that culture, that becomes a part of you. It sounds like you're being told where to be and what to do. Well, then you start telling other people where to be and what to do, and it becomes just a part of your natural personality.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I think that it's in context, simple things like you were saying about, you know, how to get to the dentist and things like that, that sounds simple and easy, and it is. But when you add up the fact that now you've got a veteran looking for housing, looking for work, now he or she is trying to navigate insurance benefits for her family and figure out a variety of things. You have to look at it in context with, it can be very overwhelming because there's so much of it happening. It's not just the individual, you know, making that dentist appointment. That's just a small piece of the pie that just keeps adding to the right. adding to the pile, essentially.
Yeah, there's no time to acclimate. You're in the water and it's 8 feet deep and you got to swim. Charlotte Bridge Home and Foundation for the Carolinas did a study of returning veterans, and one of the things the study reports is that returning vets do not have the resume writing, interviewing, and networking skills of their civilian peers. So they're a little behind their civilian peers at that same age. How easily is that taught or learned, those skills?
It takes some effort, definitely. It takes an understanding of and really a translation of some of the words. It's all there, but in the military, your resume is your ORB, your ERB, your enlisted record enlisted record brief. So it's a one sheet of paper that has all the different qualifications. For Will, it would have master parachutist and airborne ranger. And you walk into an interview, you walk into a colonel's office, and he looks down the list and he sees all those acronyms and he goes, okay, I got it. This is the job you're doing. And that's it. You don't even have to open your mouth. He just looks at the acronyms and you're in. So now you're in the civilian sector and you have to explain what an ORB is, what a airborne ranger does, what an HHC XO did in a deployed situation. I mean, it might as well be Chinese. So it does take some time. We have folks on staff at Charlotte Bridge Home that can help veterans understand and call out those experiences and translate it into speak that makes sense to recruiters and hiring managers here in Charlotte.
Michael, and to Blake's point, not only the translation of the jargon, the lingo, but think about it from a respect posture. Say, for example, in an interview, the entire time you're in the military, you're treated and you're trained to say, yes, sir, no, ma'am, yes, ma'am, no, sir. And so as those individuals transition out into civilian organizations and as you're having interviews, that level of respect, that language, that verbiage is hard to break. And so,
what's wrong with that verbiage?
With some people, it can be offensive as you're giving too much deference, maybe potentially subordinating yourself.
Interesting.
And so, it can be perceived in different ways. So, having the ability to rehearse and to work with these transitioning veterans on how do you kind of bring it down? How do you translate again that level of respect, those skills? How do you make it more conversational?
It sounds like American society is what needs the training, not you guys, because it used to be that way. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Syracuse University published a study where they say that academic research supports a robust, specific, and compelling business case for hiring individuals with military backgrounds and experience. But it sounds to me like employers either don't know that or are uncomfortable in the face of it.
I think employers fall into a couple of different buckets. There's employers like Queen Associates and Bank of America who do get it, who mm-hmm. do understand and do have those robust programs that help facilitate veteran hiring. I think there's other companies who are trying to get there and are trying to figure that out and know that there's value in veterans, but they need to educate their gatekeepers.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think there's companies who see a veteran resume and hear a veteran, do a phone screen. And just like Will said, yes or no, sir. And it requires so much extra effort to get that out, get the information out that's relevant to their business, that it's too daunting when they have so many other candidates in the job market right now.
How difficult is it for people who have been in life or death situations and who have made life and death decisions and that they know they're doing the right thing may keep their buddy alive or have their buddy lose their life or be gravely injured? How difficult is it for somebody with that experience to go into a normal job? It's got to seem completely unimportant.
It's just a different mission, Mike. You have to just put it, what you did in the military and those decisions and those moments in the military, that was what was needed of you then. And the job I do now is just different, and the same decisions, maybe the gravity isn't the same. Fortunately, that's never a case here in Charlotte that I have to make those decisions and worry about my coworkers the way I did in the military. But there's still very important missions to be done at Charlotte Bridge Home that require discipline and energy. And
yeah, and Mike, I think that's a great point to bring up because, my current office is a relatively small group of people, mm-hmm. and it can, to me at times, actually seem very comical what stresses out my coworkers. And my manager, she's married to a Navy Reserve 05. What is that? It's not a lieutenant colonel in the Navy. It's something with a really high rank, regardless. And you know, she's pulled me aside a couple times and said, I understand that this is a breeze for you, but you need to understand that for your coworkers, this is definitely a big deal for them.
And that could be that could be misread, couldn't it?
Somebody who
doesn't get with the program.
Unempathetic, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And so, you know, interpersonally, that's something that I need to make sure that I'm constantly aware of, that when somebody else is struggling, because to them in their world, I'm a recruiter. So, if they're not getting enough hires or things like that, that can be incredibly stressful. And to me, I kind of go, yeah, that's not really that stressful at all.
But how do you deal with the loss of purpose? Because, if you were making decisions that other people's lives depended on, and if you're so mission-driven that winning this war, obviously, was why you signed up, and it was important, and it is important, and we had been attacked, etc., and suddenly you're sitting behind a desk, and you're told to sell 1,500 widgets today, and if you don't sell 1,500 widgets, well, maybe you'll do it tomorrow. We're not going to fire you. But that's just – it's not the same. It's a loss of purpose.
You're exactly right. It's not the same. And there is a loss of purpose. But the nice thing about the military is that purpose is there every day in work. And maybe that purpose isn't there in your 9-to-5 work, but there's other opportunities in the community. And that's what we've tried to do at Charlotte Bridge Home, is to provide those opportunities that maybe work doesn't allow. But there is tons of great, meaningful work to be done here in Charlotte. And we've got thousands of veterans who could really make a difference to our schools, our parks, our community.
Hey, and Mike, to Blake's point, that's what we find in Bank of America. Most of our veterans are those that are volunteering beyond the workday, who are getting engaged with organizations like the USO of North Carolina, Charlotte Bridge Home, who are going to be Little League coaches, who are out in their communities giving back, and again, serving a higher calling or a higher purpose, and doing something beyond the average daily work rhythm.
A lot of vets report feeling isolated after the military. Is that because of the extraordinary camaraderie they had while they were in the service that they can't find a way to duplicate in civilian life? Or is it because they come home and no matter how many family members they have or friends that they have who want to welcome them back, those people don't understand?
Mike, I think it's the former. I think it's the camaraderie, the esprit de corps that you experience in the military can't be matched in any organization, and I've been in several.
Why is that?
Again, do you think about the mission that you have, where the decisions you make are life and death? And so that going through that shared suffering, shared sacrifice, creates a bond that you can't really describe, but it's something that lasts really for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And so as you compare that mission to what you do every day, to your point, selling widgets, it does scale and pale in comparison. But I think that's why it's important, where you have to have organizations or companies have to have military-type support teams within. And at Bank of America, we have a military support and assistance group that's filled with entirely of veterans, and we become that esprit de corps unit to make sure we can share common values and common experiences.
Mike, to Will's point, there's the military day, there's a real organizational piece to that we can talk about after the break.
Okay, well, you're very smart. We're coming up to a break, and we're going to take it now. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Park Road Baptist Church, a progressive faith community in Charlotte, encouraging independent thought with an emphasis on community service, social justice, and interfaith understanding, on Facebook and at parkroadbaptist.org. The White House claims victory after healthcare signups surpassed 7 million. General Motors Chief Mary Barra and the nation's top auto regulator testify on Capitol Hill. And the Supreme Court strikes down limits on overall campaign contributions. Just some of the topics that they'll be talking about on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock. It's the news roundup because it's Friday, the national hour first, the international hour at 11. And when we come back, we'll talk more about reacclimating or acclimating veterans who are returning from our wars in Afghanistan and Iraq to civilian life. Stay with us.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. Spring is a time for rebirth.
What? You think my car will start? The rebirth I had in mind for your car was more like crushing it and bringing it back as a container of Zippo lighters.
Okay.
So if you're ready for a little rebirth in your driveway, why not donate your old car?
And support this station. Call 1-866-789-8627.
Or go to WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Blake Bourne is with us. He's the director of Charlotte Bridge Home. They're having a community veterans summit April the 8th from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's free. It's open to the public with particular concentration and focus on HR people and employers in the area to help them understand what veterans bring to the table if you give them a job. That'll be at the Charlotte Convention Center on April the 8th. David Sanugera is with us. He's a technical recruiter for Queen Associates and a 4-year veteran of the Army. And Will Manning is a senior vice president at Bank of America and a former parachutist in the 82nd Airborne. You wanted to follow up, Blake, on the organizational component of what the military brings people, particularly in a combat zone, that suddenly vaporizes when they come back to civilian life.
It does. I mean, to Will's point, there is a real bonding experience that happens in those mission-critical moments. But structurally, the way the military is formed, regardless of if you're at a service academy or a basic training unit or in a deployed environment, you are spending day and night with the same men and women. Your job and your daily responsibilities rely on the men and women to your left and right. So you get up in the morning. The first thing you do is make sure everyone's there at physical fitness, you know, PT in the morning, 6 a.m. You all do physical fitness together. Then you all go have breakfast together. And then you all work the whole workday together. And then you make sure together you all leave at the same time and everyone is okay. And then you replicate that day after day. In a deployed situation, you're also living together in the evening.
And particularly in a deployed situation in a place like Afghanistan, you really don't leave that combat or that unit area, the base area. You stay there.
Correct.
You don't go sightseeing.
No.
You stay there. So you're all together all the time, 24/7, for years in some cases, because people have multiple deployments in this war.
Absolutely. And you take that for granted in that it seems like you have a lack of choices and you're confined and it's you know, maybe a terrible situation. But what you don't realize is there's that camaraderie and that reliance on one another that – then you come into a community, you know, a civilian community, and it's not no longer there. And yeah. Then there's that lack and there's that hole.
We've been talking a lot about getting jobs and fitting back into civilian life, and all of that is important. But I think one of the great national disgraces that we have in this country is the extreme difficulty that a lot of veterans face in getting what they deserve in terms of medical care and mental health care, and just navigating the red tape of the Department of Veterans Affairs. It's a national disgrace. I rarely give my opinion on this program, but it's disgusting. Why is it happening?
Mike, the Veterans Administration is trying and working very hard to change that. It's just a large organization that's trying to support generations and generations of veterans, from World War II veterans who are still alive and still need, you know, specific services, the baby boomers that went to Vietnam, and now you have an influx of young veterans with very new and different and complex problems, and it's a lot for any organization to handle, and they weren't equipped initially.
And they weren't equipped. We didn't plan for this. We sent all these people to war for this 10-year period, and we didn't make any contingency plans for their return. What were we thinking?
It's a difficult, you know, when you're in the situation that we were in as a country in early 2000s, and the focus was on the mission, and on you know, I can't speak for the government or the Veterans Administration. I know they're doing a great job. They're a big partner of Charlotte Bridge Homes, and that's what I think. It's really up to the community to help bridge that gap. The Veterans Administration will get it fixed, and they're doing a great job, you know, to improve their services, and it's getting better. But in the meantime, in that interim, it's relying on the community, Charlotte Bridge Home and USO and all these organizations who can fill that gap and connect, navigate.
Are people filling that gap? In other words, if you have a medical or a psychological need to see a physician or a psychiatrist or a psychologist in the military, and you're on a waiting list that is keeping you from seeing those people because they're overwhelmed, do they refer you to and pay for appointments to civilian doctors and civilian psychologists?
The VA doesn't, if you're registered in the VA, sometimes they will refer, and they are beginning to outsource that to the community. But organizationally at Charlotte Bridge Home, what we try to do is find service providers in the community who can help provide those things that the VA would provide for someone, you know, in the interim who's trying to get into the VA system. Or
how difficult is that to do for you?
Sometimes it is difficult. It can be very difficult depending on the severity of the issues or
the
questions.
Is that because the method to pay those people is not in place yet for their services, or is it because they too are overwhelmed and they can't take on additional?
Both. Yeah, I think partly both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the military has always been a really good microcosm of society as a whole, and so you've got a healthcare crisis in the United States, period, and then you've got a mental health crisis as well. And with the military having so many people coming out of active service, it's a very good spotlight for that. So, you know, the VA isn't the only hospital with significant issues. And to Blake's point, they're definitely improving. And in fact, I think we just broke ground. The VA just broke ground on a new hospital here in the Charlotte area. So, making forward progress. But you're right. I mean, it's definitely been a struggle. And but it's important to remember though that it's not just the VA that's having that struggle.
Okay. A lot of these, we've had some, well, just 2 days ago at Fort Hood, we had an incident, and that's a replication in some ways of an incident that happened there 5 years ago, and there have been other incidents with veterans who have been having problems reacclimating or psychological problems, and they're highly trained with weapons, and they sometimes use them. PTSD, traumatic brain injury, major depression are all things being suffered by a lot of veterans. Are they getting enough help? And do these incidents spur the Veterans Administration to see to it that they get help?
Well, Mike, the incident that just happened the tragic incident that just happened at Fort Hood, that was an active duty soldier. So he wasn't quite a veteran. He wasn't he was still within the military system. And there are mental health providers in the Army, and there are mental health providers here in the community that can provide services for both active and veterans community. But it's difficult. There's such a large spectrum of PTSD and traumatic brain injuries, and where someone falls in on that, it's not always easy to recognize. You know, they say these are the silent or the invisible injuries of war. So sometimes it can be hard to identify someone who has those needs.
But that, it seems to me, might be something that would make a civilian employer reluctant to hire an individual being who has multiple deployments coming out of the military, because what if they have a problem?
Absolutely. And I could see why that would be a concern based on what they hear and what they see. But what we don't see is there, you know, of that 250,000 veterans that are exiting the military, a very small percentage, and I don't know what it is, but a very small percentage have such an extreme case of PTSD or traumatic brain injuries that would be a detriment in the workplace. There's thousands of veterans that do suffer from PTSD and do suffer from traumatic brain injury, and some here in Charlotte that are productive members of their companies.
The military is a very disciplined culture. It's a even though there are women serving in it, it's a pretty macho culture. Is it still difficult for an individual to make themselves go get help because it's not seen as
I think the
tough.
Stigma is going away. It's still there, but it's definitely going away. I know when I was in 2008, I was in the armor school. Basically, we were learning to be tankers. And a guy we looked up to the entire time, he's a major, which is a pretty senior rank in the Army. He came to us at the end of the six-month course, and this guy to us was everything. He was an airborne ranger, and now he's a tanker, and the list goes on. And he, right in front of a group of 70 lieutenants, said, "I have PTSD, and I'm on this medication." And so again, if you're not honest enough, and if you're in our case, it was an all-male group, he said, if you're not man enough to recognize that you have an issue and go get the help for it, then he actually used a bit of a strong word because the group we were in, he
don't use
said
it here.
He said coward. Basically, he said it's an act of cowardice not to go get that help. And for what he was trying to do was to get rid of the stigma. And then us as future leaders at that time wanted to instill in us that we have to tell our soldiers that, you know, we've got to do whatever we can to get rid of that stigma. You've got to go get help. And there's so many programs in the military in terms of encouraging soldiers to go get help.
It's a difficult conundrum because we do ask them to do so much and be that warrior ethos, live
right.
That, you know, get the mission done.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, we also need you to raise your hand and ask for help too. So we're getting better at it. And that's a fine line to balance.
Yeah, Mike, from an employment perspective, I mean, we have this is a question that's difficult. We're, to your point, it's a disgrace. We are having some sensitivity kind of dancing around it because it's in the area of public policy, and there are things that we can't control. But I think from the things that we can, I think it's important that those of us that are in the business community, that are in the spaces with nonprofits, to be able to support the Charlotte Bridge Homes, to be able to support the USOs of North Carolina who have these transition services and support services and have resources to make connections. And that way we won't have to shy away from the candidates because we have partners who can help them during this time.
Mm-hmm. Will's exactly right. We would love to have more community partners, those civilian service providers, to come to us to help us address these issues, the veterans that have the issues. There's a lot of veterans that don't at the same time.
I'm going to get back to the skill set that military people bring to the table when they're looking for civilian jobs. You're in the IT world, and I'm sure that a lot of military veterans have to deal with electronics in the field, and they have to know how to repair it, not just use it and turn it on, but they know how to fix it because they can't take it to Radio Shack.
Absolutely.
to have it fixed. Is it easy to find those people in the military who can do what you do and who bring skills to the table that the Bank of America needs, whether it's technical IT skills or whether it's something else?
It can be a little bit of a challenge. You know, speaking in directly in my space, in the IT space, we have lots of soldiers, lots of veterans that have technical experience. And the hurdle quickly becomes finding that organization that has the time to bring on that candidate who their experience is all in advanced radio systems and it's in advanced satellite communication systems. And those are defense systems that are not used by Bank of America or by other organizations in the Charlotte area.
Only Google.
Yes, exactly. So, and the NSA. And and so for us, you know, it's finding the right manager, the right fit, the right team where that manager can bring on one of our veterans and take the time. They know the skills are transferable. This person's mastered one satellite system. They can learn the next satellite system at, for example, Time Warner Cable.
Right.
The verbiage is different.
Right. It's just a matter of there being just an ounce of flexibility to where they know on that first day, they're not going to come in and maintain that satellite on the first day because they use a different satellite before. And what Blake was saying earlier, the hurdle is that there's 10 other candidates out there right now that have used that exact system. So getting an employer to, and we don't want them to choose a veteran just because they're a veteran, but giving them the opportunity to be on an equal playing field that, yes, it's a job market where there's plenty of candidates who have done exactly what you're looking for, but also please take the time to look at this veteran who's done something very, very similar.
Well, I was going to ask about that, and I'm surprised to hear you say what you said, because it seems to me that somebody who volunteers to put their life at risk for 10 years in the military, or 4 years in your case, or 6 years in some of your cases, and put yourself in really abysmal conditions for all that time, do we not owe it to you? I mean, yes, you volunteered. We didn't make you go, but don't we owe it to you to give you something back?
In my position, I get the opportunity to work a lot of hiring managers that do feel that way, and they do their best. And there are some realities that also set in. They have a set budget. They have set project goals, timelines, and they have a manager as well, and they need to answer to somebody. And in some cases, some organizations, they're able to say, I brought this veteran on, and we're going to do this and that, and it's all good things. But in other cases, it's assuming a certain level of risk in some cases when you hire somebody who doesn't have exactly that skills.
We were all told to go shop. That's what we were told to do. This is what our participation in the war effort was, to go shop. You guys went to war.
And Mike, no, there was never a day in my 6 years in the Army that someone told me that they owed me something. Yeah. So for me to come into Charlotte and for someone to say that they, you know, oh, I owe you this, it's a little makes me uncomfortable. And I don't want someone to owe me something.
Absolutely.
I want you to need me. Right. I want you to need a veteran in your organization.
I would agree, Mike. What we're asking is that no one owes us anything, but all things being equal, that you at least give the veteran a second look to understand the total, everything that they bring to the table.
Consider the characteristics that you can't see on a resume.
Charlotte Bridge Home, are there organizations like yours in every major city, or is this unique because Charlotte has these things going for it?
I think Charlotte Bridge Home, I think, is unique in sort of how we address it. There are a lot of great organizations, you know, across the country. The Veteran Outreach Center in Rochester, New York, is a great flagship. But what we do that makes Charlotte Bridge Home unique and unique really to Charlotte is, instead of just trying to educate veterans on the community, we also at the same time try to educate Charlotte on veterans. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we get those two groups to meet in the middle someday.
How do you reach out to military people who are coming home and making Charlotte home? How do you reach out to them?
On a couple fronts. So social media, obviously. We have a Facebook page, a Twitter account, a website. And we also have set up a relationship with Fort Bragg, and we're trying to do the same with some of the other North Carolina installations and other installations in the Southeast, of letting people know that, hey, you know, here's what makes Charlotte great. This is why we love it here. And if you come and you're interested to link up with other veterans, this is, you know, come to Charlotte Bridge Home and we can do that.
David mentioned that Vietnam veterans are among the highest, they have the highest numbers of homeless people in the country. But a lot of returning veterans from these wars are also homeless. And it's not because necessarily they are mentally unstable. They are financially unstable. Is there help for them?
There is. I mean, that's something else. The thing about Charlotte is there are so many amazing organizations that are out there to help, whether it's financial assistance, home housing assistance, mental health assistance. They're out there. But to get a veteran to be able to find that, that veteran being able to navigate the city and know who that is, that's what Charlotte Bridge Home does.
We've been talking about veterans as a whole group. We have to remember with this group of veterans, there are an enormous number of women.
Absolutely.
Not just men. Do they face substantially different challenges than their returning male colleagues?
I mean, I think the challenges are very similar. You know, military experience, you know, it definitely depends on the individual, the branch, where they served, you know, where they deployed. But I mean, just like every individual, there's going to be, you know, different issues and different questions, you know, as they come into the community. And, you know, for a female, that's no different.
How do they reach Charlotte Bridge Home, these veterans?
You can call us, 704-332-8802, or our website is charlottebridgehome.org. We also have a Facebook page. Come stop at our office on 7th Street, right past Pecan Avenue. And come join us for a run. Come join us for a volunteer project. And we'd be happy to have you and connect you to the city.
We'll put your website on our website so people can not have to write it down right now.
Perfect.
Blake Bourne, director of Charlotte Bridge Home. David Sanagera, who is a technical recruiter for Queen Associates. Will Manning, senior vice president for Bank of America. All veterans, thank you for your service and thank you for the honor.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.